What's going on, guys? You found it. One of the hottest podcasts on the rise today, Chair Shot Sports. I'm John Anthony. Lots of things to talk about today. A lot of stuff to get to. So let's hit the ring. Let's ring the bell. Let's get to work. How's everybody doing? John Anthony here. Thank you so much for joining us again here on Chair Shot Sports. Last time we were together and talking, we were talking about some SummerSlam results, talking about CM Punk, and also, fittingly, I guess, Cody Rhodes and Bray Wyatt feud that could have possibly happened. If you haven't heard, which is pretty hard to believe you haven't, we had to have a podcast last week. Things are a little bit jumbled up. Unfortunately, last week we were given the news of Wyndham Rotunda, better known as Bray Wyatt, to WWE and wrestling fans around the world, passing away, unfortunately, at the age of 36 due to a heart attack from some heart issues that were suffered during COVID. So, yeah, I mean, it's been tough. I'm sure if you're a wrestling fan, especially some of from Bray Wyatt, it hasn't been an easy week for you. It's still weird for me to just think that he's gone, and some weird, sick, dark part of me thinks it's some kind of weird storyline, which is going to pop up and be fine. As a husband, as a father, it just gets me that, you know, leaving behind his wife, JoJo, his four children. It's unfortunate. It's the trade-off, I guess, for what we get, for these people to come into our lives and give us that escape and give us a character that we can connect with and relate to and look forward to seeing, you know, on a weekly basis. And then they're just taken. So it's tough. But I don't want to get too much into that right now. We have some other things to go over, some pay-per-views. We have WWE Payback. We have, obviously last week with everything going on, I didn't think it would be right, to do a show, about wrestling when the only focus should have been on Bray. So we shelved that. I was going to do a celebration of life episode for Bray. I also just didn't want to do that as well. Not that I'm sure it would be thought of that, but I didn't want to do something using Wyndham's name and using that as episode for likes and clicks. And I can't send that out and ask people, hey, listen to this, cause it's about Bray Wyatt. And that's not how I want to use his name and, you know, have the memory from us here at Chair Shot Sports be from him. I apologize if things are a little squished into this episode. There's a lot of things going on. AEW decided to go and have back-to-back pay-per-views. So we need to talk about what happened at All In. We're going to talk about what's happening at All Out. I have WWE Payback that's going on this weekend. I also want to talk about this. The last preseason is over. It's the last Sunday, last weekend we got to worry about not having NFL football, which is awesome. So I want to talk about our thoughts on division winners and how that's going to play out and give you our Super Bowl, our championship game and Super Bowl champion predictions. And yeah, I also want to wrap everything up by talking about Wyndham a little bit, a little walk down memory lane for him as a person and also as a character. So again, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. So I guess we'll just start pretty much, we'll get things out of the way. We'll just start kind of with All Out. I apologize, All In. I don't want to go over the entire card. We'd be here for 25 minutes, half hour, just on one card. 11 great matches. You know, I've said this before on this podcast. I like to reach across the aisle, if you will. I'm a born and bred WWE guy. Been following it forever and a day. That's all I know. I also do watch AEW. I try to watch it for, and just for its production value and just take it in, enjoy it as it is. You know, I don't sit here and call it a secondary company. I don't call it a t-shirt company. You know, but I also will tell you it's not on the level of WWE. And if you're an AEW fan, you're kidding yourself. They're not there yet. They're not there. Do they have the opportunity? Absolutely. Sky's always the limit. The ceiling's always the limit. Tony has a bottomless pocket. There's a lot of good young talent in that locker room. And with some of the key WWE guys that they've brought in to help out those younger guys, I think that they definitely have some promise. So all in, the biggest wrestling event in history, correct? That's what we're billing it. 81,256. I think I'm off by a couple numbers. I didn't write it down, but I know it was 81,000. Biggest gate ever, blowing out everyone else out of the water. Amazing. Wembley Stadium was jam-packed. Looked amazing. Great vibe. Break it down for you. The entrances were good. Great for that matter. Loved the entrances. They did a great job on the Trons and all that good stuff. If I had to be honest with you, I'd give it a solid B. A lot of the matches, I think, was a lot of, you know, kind of not pandering or just walking around, but just a lot of trying to tell a story that wasn't there. Like just trying to just come up with things and just taking a really sweet time to get into a move or get into whatever segment of the match you're supposed to be getting into, whether it be the beginning, middle, or end, setting up a finish. All the matches, like I said, were really good. I can't really think of any of them that were really bad. There were, you know, with any pay-per-view, with any wrestling match, I mean, there was a good amount of, you know, botches with a lot of them. But like I said, that could be, you know, that can be for a lot of reasons. It happens in WWE too, happens on there on weekly television, also on pay-per-view. So couple bullet points. You know, Punk going over on Joe was a good move. For the Rail AEW Championship, I think that was a great match. Punk going back to doing, you know, doing the Hogan thing, Hogan and Rock thing, hitting the Pepsi plunge, getting the 1-2-3. I think it was good. Punk getting a lot of heat, getting the crowd going. Good opening match, really good. Get everyone going, warmed up. The Hook Perry match, phenomenal match. Love Perry, great wrestler. I think he has a lot of potential. And Hook is great too. I don't think these guys are showcased enough, and I really hope Tony, you know, finds a way to get these guys on there on a mainstream basis on the Dynamite or Collision. Well, seeing as what happened after All In, and we'll get to that too with CM Punk, it definitely won't be on Collision. It'll definitely be a Dynamite issue. So that was for the FTW belt. So Hook was able to get that back. FTR Young Bucks match of the night, bar none. I think the Bucks are slightly overrated. That's my opinion. I'm sure, you know, everyone, you know, feel free to debate me on that. If you don't follow us on Twitter, please do. It's at ChairShotSports. Not taking anything away from them in the least. And I'm not sitting here telling you like the all-time greatest is going to be the Usos. That's what I'd like to talk about that a lot on here. It's not, you know, coming at me as a WWE fanboy is probably not the best argument if you're going to come with that. That's not what I'm talking about. There's a lot of better tag teams out there in, you know, in recent memory that are just better than the Young Bucks. And that can be a whole other segment that we probably have down the road here on Chair Shot Sports. But it isn't me going, oh, it's the Usos. Usos are the greatest ever. There's a lot of other tag teams out there that are really good. Young Bucks, you got to give them their flowers, though. They get it done. They're great. Great match with FTR. FTR can go, too. I miss them in WWE. Phenomenal team. Can really go. And that was for the tag belt, so FTR was able to retain in the third matchup between the two of them. Definitely, when this match happened, the Fatal 4-Way for the women's title, AEW women's title, definitely, I was one of the few that said Saraya was going to win it. I mean, if you didn't see how this was going to map out in getting to All In, I mean, it just made perfect sense. I mean, you get the Outcasts pretty much breaking up in that one match. Saraya gets to win it in front of her home crowd. The entire family's there. They got her mom involved, which is awesome. It was just it was good. It was a good match. They definitely did what they had to get done. All the other matches were great as well. You know, the Bullet Club Gold's out there. You know, it was a great pay-per-view at the end of the day. You know, also, I'm sorry, I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, MJF and Adam Cole on a banging main event, a lot of false finishes, you know, who's going to turn on who, setting all that up was amazing. Love the fact of, you know, we get the pin, you know, the double pin on both with the double clothesline, asking for 5 more minutes, you know, and then MJF's like, no, that's not how we're going to do this. We're going to go all the way. We're going to get a winner. So, I mean, it was really good, you know, because you even hear the crowd starting to boo when they did the double pin, like it was going to end in a draw. You're thinking, are we going all out? Are they going to redo this at all out and run it back? So luckily we were able to get a winner and go that route. So that was good. And also, you know, they also in the beginning at 0 hour, they were able to capture the Ring of Honor tag team titles. So yeah, awesome all around, solid B show. I'm sure if, you know, again, I'm not taking anything away from the attendance and them being in Wembley and selling out Wembley. I'm not. I'm looking at it straight just as a show, as a presentation from match to match, from start to finish. B, you know what I mean? And that's you can't go wrong with that. Can't go wrong with that. I think it was very well done, and definitely a feather in the cap for AEW and for Tony Khan. And then to announce they're going back there in one full year, which is awesome. I think that's really good for them. If Wembley can be their one spot to have their that can be their WrestleMania, what have you, maybe next year. Tony has more time to like plan around this and make this the crown jewel if Wembley wants to have them all the time or every year, year over year, make it the one over the pond or, you know, out of country event. I think, you know, TK can really do something in kind of next year, already see, okay, this is where we're going. How do we get there? You know, just like the way we, you know, WWE does with WrestleMania. So that's what I'm saying. Like, these are the little things where if Tony's going to decide, okay, that's our mania, we're going to do it in Wembley for a while, something to look forward to across, you know, make it an international kind of thing. Now, you know, if that's the payoff, if that's the WrestleMania, then, you know, if that's going to be where All In is going to be now, and that's your WrestleMania, then now, you know, all roads lead there and work back. How do we get there? So again, bright things happening for AEW, definitely a feather in their cap, and awesome to see it happen. You love to see the fans get into it, the connections with the wrestlers are having a great time. Yeah. And you're just pushing AEW to just better themselves week after week, month after month, show after show. So with that being said, 1 week removed from that, and then we get All Out. So which is the pay-per-view 1 week after. It's almost like a payback sort of pay-per-view. Going through that, we have Bullet Club Gold versus FTR and the Young Bucks. Then you have Miro versus Hobbs. Bullet Club Gold and FTW and the Young Bucks. I feel like with Bullet Club Gold getting the win at all in, I feel like this is where FTR and the Young Bucks are going to get their win at All Out. Then we also have, like I said, Miro and Hobbs. Some of these matches too, I got to be honest, it's like there's no real rivalry really explained. It was like a lot of these were thrown together. You had 1 week for someone to call somebody out on the show on Dynamite. I mean, you really didn't have Collision because it's the night before. You got to have a card set, right? I know the week before All In, they did a couple things where people were set for All Out. But, I mean, it's kind of just like a thrown-together card. It makes sense, don't get me wrong. A lot of these matches are going to be, I don't want to say bangers, but they'll definitely be interesting. Definitely be, action-packed, good to watch. Miro and Hobbs. Miro probably one of the most underused talent on the roster right now from WWE. Miro has amazing talent, is great in the ring, connects with the audience. You know, Hobbs, after he does, you know, way back when, you know, he turns on Starks, trying to go on his own, nothing's really come of that either. So I feel like it's two guys who have really nothing going on and throwing them together for a pay-per-view match. I think I mean, you got it. I think Miro goes over here. I mean, Miro, I don't think Miro's going to come out for this match and just job over Hobbs. I mean, it's unfair to Hobbs too. Hobbs should be in some sort of rivalry right now and just kind of going for either the TNT title or heck, even going either, you know, I know the MJF Adam Cole thing is going to go on for a little bit. I mean, we do have the AEW Heavyweight Championship Eliminator tournament going on right now, and that's going to conclude at Grand Slam. But Hobbs should definitely be involved in something like that, going for that title. If not the TNT title. Next up, you have Tashida and Omega. Kind of like almost like a grudge match almost. Again, one of those matches where I can see where Omega is going to pick up the win here. This is like the pay-per-view, if I had to guess. Booking-wise, looking at a lot of these, except for, you know, take away the championship matches. I mean, a lot of these is where you get to right the wrongs, pretty much, of what happened at All In. So then FTR and the Young Bucks, they get their, you know, the Young Bucks get their win it all out. Miro gets a win against Hobbs. Omega's going to get, you know, he took the L at All In. He's going to get the win it all out. Then he gets Samoa Joe and Shane Taylor for the Ring of Honor TV title. Again, one of those things where, I mean, it's good to see Joe's a fighting champion. It's two pay-per-views. He's going for a title. Now he's defending one. I think this might be the match where Shane Taylor, like, they take it off as Joe and finally give it to someone else to start building them up. And I've said it also, I mean, Ring of Honor, you need, if there's one thing as we come to the last quarter of 2023, we're at that point, if you're a wrestling fan, you know, if you're a WWE fan, you're going through Payback, Survivor Series, right around the corner is the Royal Rumble, you're already looking to January, right? If you're Tony Khan, you've done Wembley, you've done All In, you really start looking at 2024. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Ring of Honor needs to be its own brand. I don't know if he goes and hires somebody, brings somebody on to be a quote-unquote GM, you know, a commissioner, I don't care. But you need to get some kind of TV deal here. That could be a predominant – you could honestly have a fourth show because Rampage is taped. You could have a third live show. If you put Ring of Honor on, heck, put it up. If you're that confident in Ring of Honor, which you should be with the talent that have the belts and what you could put on that, you could literally, you don't need to do a talent split between Collision and Dynamite. You can just take some of your roster, do a draft and put people on Ring of Honor. You know what I mean? Like it's just, this needs to be its own show. Having them be on the AEW, having them be on like AEW pay-per-views, for, you know, being on Dynamite, being on Collision, being on Rampage, it's watering down the Ring of Honor. It's just, it's almost like Tony bought it just to have the belts and give more people titles because he had such a plethora of roster. He needed to give people championships. You need to break Ring of Honor away and make it its own. You know, if you watch WWE, you know, they do blur the lines right now. It's almost like you need to take a page out of what Paul Levesque is doing in WWE. You need what the other Khan is doing, what Nick Khan is doing. You need to kind of take Ring of Honor needs to be its own brand and bring in some guys from Dynamite, bring here and there, bring in a guy from Collision and have them do some work with those people and have them go back to their shows. You know, on NXT, you have Baron Corbin down and he's a mainstay because there's nothing for him on the main one. On Dynamite, there's plenty of guys sitting and catering that aren't on the show, don't have a belt, have nothing going on. Put them on Ring of Honor. Have them go up against Joe. Have them go, you know, against MJF and Cole for the titles. You know, you can go for the never open weight. You know, it just perplexes me why, you know, spending all that money to buy Ring of Honor and just keep it on the back burner. It should be its own show going against NXT. Heck, put it on Thursdays. There's nothing going on Thursdays. Then you got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like AEW has the whole back of the week. So again, just my idea. So Shane Taylor going over on that, I think that's going to, they take it off of Joe, kind of start building up Shane, kind of making him a name and starts with the TV title. Speaking of Ring of Honor, Cole and, MJF will be going against a to be determined team, that's going through a tournament to face them for the Ring of Honor tag team, championships. So that'll be good. I believe that's still Cole and MJF have to hold on to that. I don't think you're ever going to see them losing those belts yet until there's something happens with the heavyweight championship. And then we get into the three top title matches of the night. MJF nor CM Punk will be defending either one of their titles. CM Punk is currently suspended due to the incidents during All In. We'll talk about that. Talk about that in a little bit. You have Statlander, Chris Statlander, and Ruby Soho going for the TBS title. Again, I think with Soraya getting her shot at the gold, I think this is where Ruby's going to finally get her taste of gold in the singles. I think she's going to go ahead and she's going to take that off of Statlander going for the TBS title. And that should be one heck of a match, to be perfectly honest with you. One match I'm looking forward to is the Orange Cassidy and the Jon Moxley match for the international title. I think this match is going to be a banger. It's going to be amazing. Mox can go. Cassidy can go all day long and twice on Sundays. Orange Cassidy is probably one of the best wrestlers AEW has going right now. Gimmick-wise, just over with the crowd, just the connection you have with the fans, and just overall being able to tell the story in the ring while having the comedy parts of it, but also just a damn good wrestling match. I think with right now with Mox doing a lot of, stuff with the Combat Club, Cassie has been on a long, long string of wins with the international title. I think this is finally where he coughs it up to somebody, a little bit better. I think Mox goes on a little bit of a run. This probably carries us until the new year. Gives him some stuff to do until either they figure out they merge the AEW title or put him in a feud with MJF, put him in a feud with Punk, whatever they want to do. But at the end of the day, I think they need something for John. And, I think him having that belt in the club will help him also win and get a couple matches under his belt winning. Because let's say you need that little help from, your friends. Get Cesaro in there. Get Yuta in there to give you a hand. John Moxley going over on that. And also, too, Luchasaurus with Christian is going to be going as Darby Allin. Darby's going to be challenging for the TNT title. I want to believe Darby's going to win this match. I really do. But the Christian gimmick, Christian and the Luchasaurus gimmick is so hot right now. The only way I can see this going sideways and going to Darby is if Sting gets involved and pretty much neutralizes Christian, or Sting gets involved and does something to Luchasaurus, you'll see Darby go over. I don't think this is going to be one of those pay-per-views where you see all the titles change hands. And if I already have Ruby winning the TBS title and Moxley taking the international title, I really can't go for the clean slate and tell you that, Darby Allin's going to be your new TNT champion. So pretty sure Luchasaurus is going to retain, hold on to it. Obviously, Christian's going to have his hand in that because Christian's the so-called champion. So I'm sure he'll be doing whatever he can to make sure they keep the belt in that camp. That's your wrap of All In. That's your preview of All Out. I'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the other promotion and go over WWE Payback. What's going on, guys? Welcome back. Chair Shot Sports, John Anthony. All right, so we've covered talking about All In, talking about All Out that's coming up. There also was another pay-per-view going on this weekend, WWE Payback. Coming to you guys from Pittsburgh, PA. Card looks pretty good. They've had a decent amount of time to build it up and get it ready. So, on paper, looks like there should be definitely some bangers on there. Looks pretty good. So we'll start at the bottom as usual, do work our way up to the main event. Starting with the one match that isn't even a match on the card, the Grayson Waller Effect Show will be hosting Cody Rhodes, the American Nightmare. I think this is going to be a great segment. I think this is either going to set up a Grayson Waller Cody feud. If you look, Cody likes to post up on his socials, especially on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, if you're not already following us, definitely do at Chairshot Sports. All the latest news, headlines from just wrestling that covers WWE, AEW, New Japan, Impact. Also covering all the biggest sports outlets, football, baseball, basketball. And this is that time of year in the fall when a lot of sports are going on at once. So definitely your one-stop shop for everything you want to know to be in the know with any information going on. Also, giving away a lot of things this upcoming football season. We just recently, last a couple weeks ago, when we hit our 3,000 followers, we gave away a signed and certified Chrissy Hemme Playboy. In a little bit, when we start talking about our football predictions, I'm going to be announcing a jersey giveaway and how you can enter to get into that. So back to talking about Twitter. Cody likes to talk, like put up his schedule, where he's going to be, when he's going to be there. If you've taken a look at the schedule that he has, there's a lot of SmackDown nights on there. So that could tell you either it's going to be A, you look at a Waller effect, altercation where him and Grayson go at it and kind of set the seed for going forward on shows where he calls them out, or two, what I think is going to happen, a lot of people have been clamoring for it, is you're going to be seeing a John Cena Cody Rhodes rivalry for the next 8 to 9 weeks, possibly culminating at Fastlane. So that's definitely something to look forward to. I think either or is a great feud for Cody. Waller, I think, it would be amazing for Grayson to get that rub from Cody, to get that main event level kind of matches and that kind of exposure for him. And I think Cody and John Cena is just, it writes itself. That's amazing back and forth. The only issue with that is, I mean, I can't see Cena turning heel for 8 to 9 weeks into October. And Cody has already said he doesn't do heel. He stays face. So it's more than likely going to end up being Grayson Waller, but one can hope. Starting with one of the first matches of the night, certainly not the least, you have the LA Knight versus the Miz. I think this match is going to be great. A lot of back and forth, a lot of jawing at each other. I think a lot of both of them, each guy taking the other guy's moves. A lot of underhanded stuff when the ref isn't looking. But ultimately, at the end of the day, LA Knight coming out on top on this. I think this has been a great rivalry for Knight. Going up with Miz, getting his feet wet as far as getting to a rivalry, getting more exposure on Raw and on SmackDown, which is a smart move, whichever show he does end up on. Ultimately, I believe he's probably going to end up back on SmackDown, probably till the draft. But definitely a good rivalry. Definitely some good promo work. Definitely good John back and forth. LA Knight comes out victorious on top with that one. We also have the Becky Lynch versus the Trish Stratus steel cage match. The payoff, I think, on this is Becky Lynch. It's been a great rivalry. I think kind of I'm a huge Trish fan. Always have been, even back in the Attitude Era. Love her work. Had the opportunity to meet her. Awesome person. I just think this is the payoff for Becky. I think Becky's getting a little stale. I think they both are. I think this comeback has run its course. I think it's time for Trish to go away for a while again. Whether she comes back and does one more run. But I think Becky's getting a little stale. We've kind of gotten just caught up in being this one trick pony with Trish and just focused on that. They're planting seeds for Becky and a Tiffany Stratton feud, for Becky to go to NXT. I think that's a good move. Have her go over on Trish and then maybe show up that the next Tuesday on NXT, or maybe call her out on Raw and show up on NXT. I think it's definitely something Becky needs to kind of reinvigorate and kind of reintroduce herself back into holding a title and just being on that main event kind of level. I think, like I said, it's been a little lax for her in this rivalry, but definitely a good payoff. Definitely a win for her tomorrow night on Saturday. That'll be awesome. One of the first title matches we have going on, one out of four, is your Rey Mysterio versus Austin Theory for the United States title. I'm probably in minority on this, but I think Theory goes over. And I think it happens with the Grayson Waller camaraderie that they have now, the little tag team. I think there's some interference. LWO probably gets involved as well. If I had to think like long term, seeing where they're going with this story with the whole Rey Mysterio and the winning the belt, I think Escobar goes in to help Rey, cost them the belt. And I think Rey and Escobar go on a rivalry for themselves. A little infighting. That's what Trips likes to do. He likes a little infighting in the factions. So if I had to guess, LWO tries to help with Waller down there. Somehow Escobar costs Ray, distracts him, hits him on the rope, hits him instead. I think it causes Theory to pick up the 1-2-3, and Theory takes back that belt. And I think that's when you're going to start to see LA Knight going after Austin Theory for that belt the next Friday on SmackDown. So we got Theory on that one. Second championship match we got going on is the Pittsburgh Steel City Steel Cage match with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn taking on Damian Priest and Finn Balor. This is a no-brainer. Owens and Zayn. Only because, I mean, obviously cards are always subject to change, but knowing that when they go overseas, what they advertise is what the people want over there. So if they've already been advertised to defend over at Superstar Spectacular, so Owens is in for the win. I think it's gonna be a great match. I think there's gonna be a lot of infighting again between Priest and Balor, maybe missed tags, one tags the other, not wanting to come out. I think that'll be good. So it should be definitely a good match. All four guys can definitely go out, definitely roll and ball. But definitely Owens and Zayn coming out on top of that one. I guess your co-main event, if that's what we're going in that order. You got Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez for the Women's World Championship. I got to tell you, I mean, it doesn't make a rhyme or reason. And I know I'm going off of what Rhea kind of did the foreshadowing on Raw. That if all of Judgment Day doesn't come out walking away with belts, there's going to be some changes. I think this might be the time. It might be the move. Again, as someone who watches WWE and knowing, they got to start setting things up for the next four to eight months, I should say, to get to WrestleMania. I can see Rhea dropping the belt at this point to Raquel. Whether Raquel gets herself a lengthy run or just a couple months to kind of get it off of Rhea to kind of put that wedge into the Judgment Day remains to be seen. But I definitely think that this would be the move to definitely take the belt off of Rhea, put it onto Raquel, and have her have her run. They've definitely done things to keep this rivalry alive for the past, I want to say, 2 months, whether it be the knee injury or pulling it off of an event and just Rhea not wrestling and things like that. Just, I feel like they've pushed this back far enough where they've gotten to payback to get the payoff and have to finally have Raquel get her title win. But it makes sense also where all Judgment Day kind of goes for broke, leaves with nothing, loses everything. And then you kind of do a reset on the Raw and then moving into Fastlane and then Survivor Series as well. Your main event, Seth freaking Rollins taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. Again, I'm sure Seth is the fan favorite. The man is the GOAT, the hardest working champion out there right now. But I got to tell you, I think this is finally Shinsuke's time. He's waited a long time for this. I think he's overdue, absolutely, 110%. But I think it's finally time for him to have his run, whether he takes the ball and runs with it till maybe the Rumble. Definitely not Mania, but definitely at least till the end of the year, maybe even Elimination Chamber, the latest. But I don't think he's walking into WrestleMania with the title. It's no secret, no surprise, and it's not a coincidence that Shinsuke is using, and WWE in general is using the storyline of Seth's injured back, real life injury on his back and his vertebrae, bringing that to light and using that as a crutch, if you will, as to how hurt Seth is, and that's going to be how Shinsuke is going to take him down. Normally in the past, you would think, this is something where he's going to Seth is going to rise above. But even on vignettes that you see with Seth talking and just the way they've been building it and the way they're packaging everything up, definitely looks like to me, I talked about this on Twitter the other day, definitely looks like to me that this is kind of setting this up where Seth takes the L. And at that point, kind of, it goes down the next road of Shinsuke battling, having to worry about, Damian Priest, and do they push Priest to go get it? Because it would happen with the Judgment Day with Rhea and the boys always infighting. I think Seth comes back out that Monday night, the next Monday night, and kind of just does his little swan song for this isn't goodbye, this is see you later, and definitely gets that taken care of. From what I've read and what I've seen, and people even on Twitter that have tweeted back at me and commented on some of the posts. It's a long, it's not a, it's not an easy road back after that. It's back surgery. Anytime you have back surgery, it's not good. There's always a chance he might not be able to get back into the ring at 100%. Look at someone like, you know, Randy Orton. That's a whole different story. I mean, that was back fusion. It was three different surgeries, and that's a whole different ball game. But still, anytime you play with the spine, you're playing with the back. That's always going to be, a lengthy time to come, a lengthy time process to come back. So, like I said, I think he comes on Monday. It's not goodbye. See you later. You know, I've done my best to be the best world champion. I mean, the man's defended double digits since having the belt. Definitely being the workhorse on, you know, from both shows. Definitely doing an amazing job with that. So, but yeah, that's how we got it. We got Shinsuke, Raquel, Owens and Zayn, Austin Theory, Becky Lynch, LA Knight, and then some angle worked with with Cody, either with John Cena or with Grayson Waller. So yeah, the payback show should be awesome. I think, like I said, they're definitely going another route where they're having 6 to 7 matches where each match has its time to breathe, able to tell its own story, and nothing's being rushed, and they're not overbooking, as Paul has said in the past. So with that covered, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and do a little NFL talk. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Chair Shot Sports. Johnny Anthony here. All right. We've talked some wrestling. We've talked All In. NOLA. We've talked Payback. You know what? It's September. It's fall. It's time for some football. We're your one stop every week. We'll be giving you all the picks, how we see it every week, every matchup going down the line. Also going to be having a couple parlays we'll do with you guys. We're going to make the same bet that we're going to suggest to you guys, and hopefully we can all make some money together. So preseason's over with. It ended last week. One more week. Everything kicks off on Thursday. Very exciting. Very exciting. If you haven't listened to the show a lot, I'm based out in the New England area. I am not a Patriots fan. So hopefully that got some – that garnered some – some points with a lot of you listening nationally. I am a very proud San Francisco 49ers fan. Have been from pretty much my whole life since I could start liking football. Got set on them, and I started liking them when I was around 10 years old, and that was the last year they won the Super Bowl. So I'm sitting here waiting for one, baby. And we're getting close. We're getting close. But I digress. Anyway, it's not about my team. It's about everyone else's team. It's about football, baby. Football Sundays. Let's go. So, like I said, last week's show, we're going to go through divisionally, kind of break down, how the teams kind of mash up. And then we're just going to kind of give you and go to the winners, break it down all the way down to the divisional, the championship. So I've compressed it down into I have just the divisional winners for you guys, and I'll share with you how we see the championship games for the AFC and the NFC forming up, and I'll give you our Super Bowl matchup and our Super Bowl winner. So make sure you guys keep this on file. We'll go ahead and keep the receipts. Check this back in January and see how we ended up. So we're going to start with the AFC. AFC East, definitely a division that is finally having some competition in it. For years and years, it has been Brady's playground. For years. And even after Tommy left, Bill Belichick was left in the dust, still here with a decent team. It just became a two-horse race. You had the Bills, who were surging with Josh Allen. And then of course, you had the Patriots. The Jets and the Dolphins were still on the come up. Well, we're finally here. And now, it's kind of funny how Buffalo, Miami, and New York, the Jets, are now ready to go. Jets sitting there with Aaron Rodgers, looking to have a banging year. And the Patriots are pretty much in the basement. Or at least everyone sees them going there. You never know what could happen with Mac Jones, and maybe they turn it around and have a magic season. But definitely not a popular opinion, but I definitely see the Jets and the Bills duking it out for the division. I think Aaron Rodgers is the extra little push and spark that New York needs. I think the New York Jets are going to take the AFC East this year. The Jets have done a great job putting the right tools around them, around Rodgers. And for the fact that they play, you know, six games in their division, I think two right there in New England, definitely taking one of two from Miami, and the Buffalo Bills game should be shootouts, and they should be amazing with Josh Allen. Got the Jets win the AFC East. We go over to the AFC West. There's no need to talk about it. It's going to be Kansas City. I'm not saying it's going to be by a landslide, by a runaway, by midseason, but you got Mahomes, you got the Chiefs. They have a great, still have a beautifully dynamic offense crafted around Mahomes. And they get it done. They win. Kelsey's still there. So, you know, Patrick still has his whoopee, still has his guy to hit that 7-8 yard out to get the first downs. I just think they still got what it takes. Still have the firepower and offense, an awesome defense as well. They're taking the AFC West. AFC North, the more it changes, the more it stays the same. I mean, the Bengals definitely making some additions in the offseason, helping out their defense, putting some more pieces around Burrow, but you still have T. Higgins. You still got Chase. Burrow has been hurt in the preseason, but from all reports that I'm reading, he's already taken reps. After the last preseason game, he's been taking reps all week. He's going to be ready to go for week one. He's obviously one to watch injury-wise as the first couple weeks go on, if he takes any big hits. But definitely, Bengals are definitely taking the AFC North. AFC South is funny. I feel like there's not one clear team that's really going to come out of the woodwork and can really make a difference, if that makes sense. So, I mean, you got the Titans, you got Houston, Jags. I feel like Lawrence is going to have a really good come out year. They've put some pieces around him as well. The defense has been good. I think it's only going to get better. I think they have a decent schedule. They're middle of the pack as far as strength. But I think Trevor Lawrence is really starting to figure it out. So I definitely have the Jags taking the AFC South. So with that said, so we have the Jets in the AFC East. We have the Chiefs in the AFC West. Coming out of the North, you have the Bengals. And out of the AFC South, we have the Jags. Let's move over to the other conference, to the NFC. NFC East, hands down, Philadelphia Eagles. I think they're going to run it back for a good portion of what they did last year. Definitely ran into a San Francisco team. I think that game was still – I'm going to be honest with you. That game was still going to probably go to Philly at the end of the day, but I think it would have been a lot more interesting, and a lot of things could have happened with Purdy playing if he didn't get injured the second play of the game. And that's not talking as someone that's being very, you know, be very, very neutral just seeing things from how they are. I think the Phillies more likely than not still would have taken that game, but I think it would have been a lot more interesting and a lot closer than it would have been if Purdy had played. NFC West, and I'm not saying this. I mean, it's going to be the Niners. The Cardinals don't even know if Kyler Murray is going to play. The LA Rams are just a shell of themselves from what they were 3-4 years ago. And the Seahawks. I mean, Geno Smith had a great year last year. I really don't think he's going to come out and have the caliber of year he had last season. They're going to be good. Don't get me wrong. They're going to be good, but they're not going to be good enough to take the division and take it away from San Fran. The Niners are built. I mean, with Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. I mean, and obviously if Brock Purdy does what he does last year, and it's not just lightning in a pan. San Francisco's taking the NFC West. NFC North. I think Cousins really just rises to the occasion like he does every regular season before the playoffs come. I think the Minnesota Vikings, I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a tough fight up at the top, but I think the Minnesota Vikings are going to go ahead and pull that off. And NFC South, you know what? I got to give it to you. You know, with Derek Carr going to New Orleans, I mean, I think he's no Drew Brees, but I can definitely tell you, I think he might be what they need down there. I mean, I think they have they're figuring out on offense. Their defense is okay. Enough to get them enough wins. It's a weaker division. But I think again, in this case, like it's not so much doing, it's not so much the Aaron Rodgers effect of the Jets, but Carr is a very, very good quarterback, not elite, not top five, but definitely a good quarterback and gets the job done. He's got a cannon, knows how to get you down the field when he needs to in 2 minute drills. He's clutch when he needs to be. So I think they get the job done. So in the NFC, we have it with the East, the Eagles taking that. NFC West, the San Francisco 49ers. NFC North is going to be the Minnesota Vikings. And on the NFC South, we have the New Orleans Saints. So those are your winners of the division. Wild card wise, I know I said the AFC East is going to be a tight battle and the Jets are going to eke out the Bills. So I have the Bills taking the first wild card. If it's going to come down to records, I feel like it's going to be, if anything, I feel like the East is going to come down to tiebreakers. That's how close I think it's going to be with them and the Jets. I think it's going to be a shootout. Him and Allen are going to have great years. But like I said, Aaron Rodgers brings that experience. He knows the time's running out. He came to New York for a reason. They've given him everything they need. There's no more excuses. He picked the team. He asked for the pieces. There's no excuse. It's time to put up or shut up. And if he wants a second ring, this is the time he's got to do it. As far as the second wild card, I have the LA Chargers. The LA Chargers coming out, finding a way, getting to that second wild card spot. Herbert gets it done. He's got an amazing arm. But for every three games that are awesome, he has two that just put him back. And they're usually key losses where they need to have wins. But I think they'll get enough done to get to the playoffs and get the wild card spot. So the AFC wild cards, I have the Buffalo Bills and the LA Chargers. Moving to the NFC. Again, I talked a little bit about the NFC West. I really think the East, the North, and the South are kind of sewed up with the Vikings, the Eagles, and the Saints. I think, like I said with Derek Carr, I think the Saints are going to rise above early in that division and just tread enough water where they take the division. I think out of the NFC West, San Francisco, I'm saying they're going to win. But I was talking about Seattle, and I think Seattle has enough to rise above the other teams that are in the NFC. This really, after you talk about those four division winners, it gets a little murky, a little kind of middle of the pack. So I have Seattle coming out of the NFC West to take the first wild card spot. And I actually think it's about time we start talking about this next team perennially in the playoffs. Well, I'm not saying division winners, but definitely wild card, Detroit Lions. I mean, they've been showing us a lot the past two seasons. Last season, phenomenal play toward the down the stretch to end where they ended. And I think it can only go up from there. They have an amazing coach. The guy is, he's talked about, he's somewhat made fun of and mocked, but he's got those guys playing in the right direction and playing how he wants them to. And he's got full command of that locker room. And that squad is ready to go. And I feel like every season, as long as they keep adding, they keep making progress and keep moving forward. You're going to see them perennially in the playoffs. So we have the Detroit Lions and the Seattle Seahawks coming out, in the wild card. So everything shakes out, wild card round, divisional round, in the AFC in the championship game. We have the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. I think this is finally the year where Josh Allen figures it out and put in this position, knowing what happened when they played the Chiefs last. I think they finally get the one over and they finally send Patrick Mahomes packing and he doesn't see the Super Bowl and he goes home after the AFC Championship. I think Josh Allen and company figure it out. They finally get back to the Super Bowl for a chance to actually win one. And they have the right squad to do it. So in the championship game, so in the AFC, I have Buffalo coming out going into the Super Bowl. In the NFC, I think we're going to be running it back again. I think it's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles with the San Francisco 49ers running back. Now, like I said, I think Philly was going to take this one regardless of what happened to Brock that game. But this is a new year. And like I said, San Francisco, the offense is built to win now. The window is closing. John Lynch knows it. Shanahan knows it. And you're running out of excuses, running out of time with this many weapons and this much power on the offensive side of the ball. And now we have a quarterback that's unlike Jimmy Garoppolo, who would get happy feet, would get scared when the pressure would come, would scramble around, try to make things happen. Someone like Brock Purdy, who is more accurate than Jimmy G, makes it happen when he does get out of the pocket. I think has a better chemistry with some of the other wide receivers like Brandon Ayuk and McLeod and things like that, instead of just always going to your Debo and having running, you know, RPOs with Debo out of the backfield and things like that. So I think this time around, San Francisco sends Philly home, and San Francisco 49ers make their way back to the Super Bowl since they were beaten by the Chiefs. So there you have it, Super Bowl. From the AFC, we have the Buffalo Bills versus the San Francisco 49ers popping onto the NFC. It's hard to do this. Obviously, saying I'm a Niners fan and trying to be objective and get it across that I am being very objective. But objectively, when you take the Buffalo Bills and match them up against the defense of the San Francisco 49ers, if they do stay healthy consistently throughout the year, it's a healthy Nick Bosa. You have Armstead. You have a healthy secondary, which is what they had last year on the Brock Purdy run before, you know, Brock Purdy got hurt. You had a defense that was clicking, a secondary that was really holding it down. DBs were doing amazing, just blitzing, blitz packages. I got the San Francisco 49ers ending the drought, bringing one home, bringing one back to the Bay, and kind of sending Buffalo home again without a Super Bowl ring, unfortunately. So there you have it. Cherry Shot Sports calls it. San Francisco 49ers are going to be your 2023-2024 Super Bowl champions. So, all right. So after this, we'll take a quick break, come back, and have a little conversation about CM Punk. What's going on, guys? Welcome back. Chair Shot Sports. John Anthony here with you. You hear this music, you know what time it is. It's time for the CM Punk segment of the week. Let me just take this opportunity, if you haven't already. I know I talked about it. If you haven't already followed us or currently are not following us on Twitter, please be sure to do so. It is at Chair Shot Sports. As I said before, all up to date, up to the minute headlines. All your wrestling fixes of AEW, WWE, Impact, New Japan, and also all your one-stop for headlines in the NFL, NBA, MLB, and beyond. All right, so before I get into this, I did mention a little earlier we are going to be having another contest, another giveaway here from Chair Shot Sports. So we did just give away a signed and certified Christy Hemme Playboy magazine. We announced that on our Twitter. A couple weeks ago, we had 3,000 followers. So to celebrate the NFL season and kick off this upcoming week, we are going to be giving away a signed and certified Joey Bosa Los Angeles Chargers jersey. Not Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa. Signed and certified, Beckett certified. I'm going to be putting it up on our Twitter a little later on. And there's a couple ways to enter. It's pretty much just following our page, retweeting the post, and then just commenting your favorite team and where you think your team is going to finish with their record this year. All those details are going to be on our Twitter again at Chair Shot Sports. We're going to run that contest for about a week or two, and then we'll give that away. We'll probably do the drawing live here on our podcast that week. So, all right, so. Not going to take a long time to talk about it, but pretty much the CM Punk stuff, I talked about it last week, is getting out of control. It really should be CM Hogan, to be perfectly honest with you. This guy is just out of his tree. The stuff that he's doing is almost more interesting than the stuff that's going on. Like, the stuff he's doing behind the scenes is more interesting than the stuff that's going on in the ring. If you haven't heard, so allegedly, before Hook and Perry had their Jack Perry had their match, Punk was like, "Listen, you can't use real glass. You know, you got to use the shatter stuff. You got to use the candy glass. You can't be using the real stuff." Perry pretty much blew him off. Goes out there, they do their spot, throws him into the windshield. It's real glass. Jack looks into the camera. You know, real glass, bitch. Cry me a river. And you know, apparently now it depends on whatever 7,500 accounts of this that happened, but pretty much the one main thing that keeps being said in all the accounts, no matter who you want to say, if Perry started it, if Punk started it, who got involved, pretty much Perry comes through the curtain, Punk gets in his face, pretty much, what are you doing out there? Why are you calling me out? Perry shoves Punk. Punk comes back with a sucker punch, gets him in a front face lock or a neck or a headlock, whatever you want to hear or believe. First, there was reports that the scrum and everything went close enough to Tony Connor was knocking monitors onto Tony. And then it was broken up by other wrestlers like Miro and other guys and Samoa Joe, stuff like that. Given now it's been, what, about 6 days now? 5-6 days? So now the story is same thing, everything good. He comes to the curtain, their nose to nose, the sucker punch, the headlock. Now Tony Khan is standing up, yelling at Punk to stop and to let him go. At this point, once it's broken up, Punk then goes for Khan, and it has to be restrained as he's yelling at Tony that he quits. He quits AEW. Wild. This is wild. This is wild stuff. Weird and wild stuff, I'm telling you. So, of course, suspensions have been handed out. And even outlets like Sports Illustrated have gotten involved, saying that both have been suspended. But apparently Punk has never been, quote unquote, notified. Punk has come out recently in the past days and said how it doesn't matter who likes him, who doesn't like him. All the greats did. Roddy Piper, Harley Race. All these folks have spoken very highly of him, so it doesn't matter how everyone else feels. He knows he's, the one true article in a world full of counterfeit bucks. He's the guy. So I can't believe this kind of stuff. It goes back to what I was talking about, what happened to Collision a couple weeks ago. I mean, the guy, it's just running roughshod, and it's to a point where if you're Tony Khan, if he is yelling at you that I want to quit. And, you know, if there's other stuff, if you read into it where Punk was left at the airport on his own to navigate and find his own way to Wembley, whether that's true or not, I mean, I guess that kind of put, I mean, if I was in a place I didn't know and they dropped me there and, you know, I'm kind of a big deal. I'm just only, you know, one of your company's champions. And you drop me somewhere with no transportation, no one there to greet me, no one there to even point me left, right, up, or down. I mean, I'd be a little upset too. I guess they might have set him off for the day. I don't know. But it just has to stop at some point. I mean, if you have a talent yelling at you that he wants to quit and he's sick and tired of what's going on and the surroundings and how everything's being run, I mean, that's a direct slap to the face if you're Tony Khan. And then you have other wrestlers around. You have producers, people hearing and seeing him talking to you like this. It's really not something you can just kind of let slide and let go. I mean, it's kind of come from the point when Punk finally made his return and was walking by Gorilla. Tony Khan was standing up with his headset on chanting, CM Punk, CM Punk, CM Punk. And now fast forward, we're at the world's, the largest wrestling event in history. And now one of your top talents who has the quote-unquote real AEW title or championship is scuffing around with one of your younger talents who's probably the future of AEW and the future of your promotion. And you're yelling at him to stop, and then he comes for you, lunges at you as if he's going to be physical with you and yells, I quit. If it wasn't for the fact that Phil was straight edge, I would say he's on something. Like, the guy was on one. But for the fact that he's a very sober individual, it's definitely a matter of whether he's had it and just doesn't like the way things are being run. And I mean, what more can you do? You've given him, it's literally come to a point where if you break it down, look at it, the man has his own title aside from what MJF has. He has his own show aside from where MJF goes, and kind of just does his own thing. It's to run Collision. Like, he's the producer and the writer, and kind of, I'm sure, tells Tony Khan some of the things he wants to be on there and the people he wants on there or doesn't want on there. It's just a matter of, it's toxicity to a whole other level. And it's definitely looking the way that, and that's the way, if you're around for the Monday Night Wars, the only thing lacking is AEW has never taken over WWE, and going this route, they won't. But Punk, I've said it before, I'll say it again, I'm a huge fan of CM Punk. I've been one ever since he came out. I'm talking like Straight Edge Society, ECW, when he first won the World Heavyweight Championship, when he cashed in. Like, I'm a very big CM Punk fan. Something along the way, he started smelling his own farts, started believing his own hype, and the man can go. But I'll tell you right now, now at his age, what he, after his injuries and him missing all this time, what he does in the ring now is not at the same caliber what he was doing in WWE, and even a little bit of what he was doing when he first came to AEW. With that being said, if you're Tony Khan, you got to at some point realize, does the end justify the means? At some point, you got to cut bait. I mean, if this is the way it's going to keep going and just feuding with people like Perry, I mean, not for nothing, AEW is definitely a destination, a paradise for a lot of guys who are disgruntled and upset in the WWE locker room, not being used correctly, and just old man Vince just using people in such a bad way, stupid gimmicks and bad creative, and just punishing people for no apparent reason just because he didn't like them. And there was this paradise and this odyssey that was AEW when Cody started it with the Young Bucks and with Kenny. It was just great for them. If you're looking in right now, all these young guys, I mean, aside from Darby Allin, who said he's never going anywhere, and you know, your pillars like the Young Bucks and Omega, who have inked long-term deals, those are your EVPs. They're not going to go anywhere. They're your foundation. You know, I mean, I can name off the entire roster of all the young guys, you know, MJF being the biggest one. I mean, does MJF see himself coexisting in a company for the long term? And you know, it's going to, whatever, I mean, it's going to be a long-term deal with Maxwell. At the end of the day, if WWE says we'll give you X and AEW says we'll give you Y, and maybe AEW is a little bit better, but you look over at WWE and you're like, you know, I can go over here. And I'm sure, you know, Paul, you know, and Nick Khan are going to give him whatever he wants. It's kind of like the Cody Rhodes effect. So when Cody Rhodes came back from AEW back to WWE, you know, like he said in his documentary, Vince was like, we don't want to change a thing. It's not broke. We're not going to fix it. We want what you're doing here. And we want it. We want it for us. We want it in our backyard. So if you're MJF and you sit down at the table with Paul and you sit down with Nick and, you know, whoever else does the negotiating, whether it's Paul, whether it's Pritchard as well, you don't look at MJF and you say, well, we want to put you into this. We want you to wear this. We kind of have this cookie cutter mold for you. It's going to be, listen, we don't want you to change a damn thing. We want you to be you. Come to WWE and just bring what you're doing here. And maybe MJF sparks maybe a TV-14 revolution. He does love being able to say whatever the hell he wants, whenever he wants, about whoever. And just, it's like a pipe bomb in his hand every single night. I say all that to go back to the CM Punk issue, where does MJF was presented with two contracts and two opportunities. If AEW does come over the top, seeing as Tony probably has deeper pockets, meaning he can allot those kind of funds to one guy, whereas WWE is now part of Endeavor and they have to kind of watch where they spend and who they spend it on. But if the juice is worth the squeeze and you have someone like CM Punk and you don't think MJF looks and goes, you know, I don't even want to be around with that guy until that bomb goes off. I don't want it to be a part of me. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if you're Tony Khan, eventually you got to cut bait at some point when it's not worth it anymore to affect the long-term health of your promotion, and still in its infancy. You know, 3, 4, 5 years is nothing. You know, if this was like a WWE kind of thing, time tested, you know, and just been through everything, it'd be different. But in such an infant stage of a promotion, wrestling wise, in wrestling terms, I mean, maybe it's time to just let go. But with that being said, I'm sure next week we'll have another interesting CM Punk segment. With that being said, we've covered our wrestling, we've covered our pay-per-views, we've covered NFL. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the life and the legacy of one Bray Wyatt. We'll be right back. Hey guys, welcome back. Chair Shot Sports, John Anthony here. We've had a great discussion today. We've talked about All In. We talked about All Out. But over at NFL, winners and losers. To start off the year for our divisions and win our Super Bowl winners. Had a little bit of CM Punk talk, but I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about one of the biggest things that's happened this past week in wrestling, and that was the unfortunate passing of Wyndham Rotunda, better known to the wrestling world as Bray Wyatt. I really didn't know. I didn't want to write a lot of stuff down and make this all canned stuff that I'd reference for talking points. And I just wanted to talk about Bray Wyatt, the character. In watching wrestling as long as I have, and as long as I seeing all the characters that I've had, you know, I've gotten to watch and, you know, cheer for and connect to. I can't remember ever getting more excited for a character than The Fiend. When the vignettes were coming out, no, don't get me wrong. Like I'm a sucker for second generation stars. The Undertaker, The Rock was probably, that carried me through middle school, high school. I'm still a huge Dwayne Johnson fan. I run my own restaurant, and we're Terramana and Zoa, proud, you know, carrying the flag. We're all about it. You know, Dwayne, from everything from inside the ring to outside, as far as working out and just his motivational stuff, just overall good guy, and connecting with The Rock and also the person Dwayne Johnson. When Wyndham started his WWE tenure, kind of breaking through as the Husky Harris gimmick, everywhere from getting paired with Cody Rhodes on the NXT show, and then coming up, you know, getting with Bray Wyatt, with Wade Barrett, as part of the Nexus, that was a good start for him to kind of get his feet wet and get everything rolling. And then kind of goes away. Then comes back as the, comes back with the, the Bray Wyatt follow the buzzer stuff. That and that gimmick alone, that was an amazing gimmick. I think that really, really resonated with the fans as like the, you know, the cult leader, the way he presented it and talking as that, you know, that southern charm to lure you in when there was always a menacing reason why he wanted you with him or what he was going to do to you once he gained your trust. I think that the character development for Wyndham at any point, I think the man was so wise beyond his years, and obviously runs in the family from IRS and even his uncle Barry Wyndham. I just think he always had it in him for the business, and it showed with the Bray Wyatt, the Eater of Worlds, when he's in his time with Matt Hardy as well. I mean, he just kept. I feel like it was always the same character, but Bray had so many layers to him and to his creativity. And one would think or believe that it's at a young age at some point, like these were characters that just sat in his brain, in his subconscious. And he was able, WWE was the outlet and the switch to allow him to unleash these and unlock them for us. For us to watch him present them in real time and show his creativity with others, but seeing his vision and being with him and helping him deliver that to us on a week in and week out basis. Rises all the way up, has WrestleMania caliber matches, you know, goes against the likes of John Cena, you know, The Rock, and kind of then goes all the way back down to being on the pre-show. And then Bray goes away again. We don't know. We haven't heard from him. We don't know what's going on. Next thing you know, we start seeing these vignettes for, you know, you see Bray Wyatt, but he's almost like a Mr. Rogers. He's got a clubhouse like feel to him, like a, you know, playhouse. The vignettes start and it introduces these puppets who, if you follow the Bray Wyatt story and Bray Wyatt coming up through developmental and some of the struggles that he had, it was no secret too. Like Bray definitely had depression issues and he had mental issues that he fought through before making his break in wrestling, which is why he was such a big advocate for depression and just making sure people, you know, see their way through things and, you know, were able to just kind of find the good in everything and were able to kind of live their lives the best way they needed to, because he was able to live out his dreams. I apologize if this is long-winded and kind of going every which play. Like I said, I didn't want to write stuff down and kind of hit a bullet point stuff. I kind of wanted to talk about him. He was important in my life. Just meaning, like, if you looked at the character of Bray Wyatt, how he was always fighting the Fiend. It was always like, it's for people who have a depression. I've never had that. I've never had to battle with that. I mean, luckily for me and you know, I feel for anyone that is going through that. I know it's not something that's easy to get through, but I just feel Bray was a very intricate and unique individual who, without even knowing him, drew you in. I had the opportunity to meet Bray about a year and a half ago at a signing in New York. And just for the four or five minutes that I got to talk to him and, get my picture taken, you know, have my Fiend belt signed and just talking to him and the laugh and the genuine happiness he was so taken aback. He kept saying it like while we were getting our pictures done. And he was just so he couldn't believe the outpour. And he had been at WWE. He had been released at this time. He wasn't back yet. He had been released, I think, for a good 7-8 months, I think. And he was so surprised at the turnout for him. And the line was, I got there kind of early. He was the first guy I got to. I wasn't stupid. I understood. Like, even having a VIP, like, it was still everyone got VIP. His line was the longest in the entire place. And it was just so, just to talk to him and like, get him to laugh and just so genuine. But yeah. And then like, you know, going back to TV, comes out as the Fiend and has this amazing run as his character after luring us in with the Funhouse, luring us in with the characters and, you know, having a secret that he wants to share with the world, and it's the Fiend. And I think that character transcended the business. I mean, I can't ever see anyone else doing that kind of gimmick. I mean, or copying it to the way he did it. But you never really, I mean, you had masked guys before, you had Papa Shango's, you had the Boogeyman, you had things like that, but you never had someone, a monster that you could believe in and was genuinely like, sold you on the scare and you could see the torment of him being the Fiend and not wanting to hurt. I could go on for another hour about everything and just the genius of how everything was sold. As a wrestling fan, like I said earlier when I opened the show, it's the trade-off. It's you get connected to these people a lot, retire. You watch it long enough, do you see, you know, the greats retire? You know, Edge, Cena's a part-time guy. You know, eventually Rey Mysterio is gonna retire. I just had the privilege about 6 months ago to meet Ric Flair. So another person I've gotten to watch and got to watch him get retired by Shawn Michaels. I got to see him walk away from the ring. So as I get older, I'm watching more and more people retire. But to expect 36-year-old Wyndham to just unfortunately untimely pass away, with a fiance and four children at home, young children at that, who don't get the chance to enjoy him and experience him the way that we did as fans on a weekly basis at the height of his of the Fiend character is just so unfair, and not right in the least. But yeah, I guess at the end of the day, we really just have to enjoy the time that we had with him. And I think, and the more people that come out and you hear and you talk to Seth Rollins and all the people in the back he worked with, Alexa, Becky, he was just genuine. And you don't find that a lot in this business, at least now. Maybe more so now, you find it now, a lot more genuine guys. But someone coming that was kind of almost a third generation with Wyndham and with Barry and with his dad, but a true second generation. And you would think, someone might have a chip on their shoulder, or kind of already have their I'm already, have their comeuppance. I'm already here. I did my thing. But he was always there to lend a smile, help somebody out, give advice. It was always, and I can tell you firsthand from seeing him and hearing him talk and just the look on his face with everyone who turned out that time that I met him, and just the genuine love that he had for fans and for, I think, the joy that he brought to everybody, with him performing. So not to get too long-winded with all of this, like I said, I mean, myself and anyone else who's talked about them on their podcast or done a sh their tribute shows, I'm sure have hours and hours and hours of material that they can talk about Bray. But I just want to keep it short and sweet and just have an opportunity to walk myself down memory lane. And like I said, having the opportunity to meet him and talk to him and just be in that energy and be in that aura was amazing. It's always hard to, I never really know how to end a show talking to him about something like that. So, instead of giving you the, the run, something like that, it's simply just, it's really just, thank you. And just everything that Bray was and everything Bray was able to do for everybody. So, with that being said, we will be back next week. We'll be talking about going into the week one of the NFL, our picks and predictions, also talking about our NFL parlay, and also talking about the results of Payback as well. That and a couple of that and a few other things. I'm sure we'll talk about Dynamite. We'll talk about Collision and whatever kind of ruckus CM Punk gets into. So, with that being said, this is John Anthony. You're listening to Chair Shot Sports. If you're not already, feel free to follow us on Twitter at Chair Shot Sports. Talk to you guys soon. Toodles.